This is the Alternative Media, exposing government corruption, defending our suspended Constitution, demanding the rights of we the people, broadcasting the truth. The puppet media dare not report. Long live liberty and death to the New World Order. Prepare yourself. This is the Alternative Media.
Okay, and welcome back to hour three of the Alternative Media, which usually is with Farron, but he is on a bit of a leave of absence. So I'm here. I'm Patrick Slattery, and I'm here with my guest, Don Advo. And Don, the last caller, he did ask in his question about the situation in Europe. We didn't get a chance to address it, but what's going on in Europe is crazy. Have you spent much time in Europe, Don?
No, I have not. I was afraid if I went there, I'd be arrested because of some of my statements about World War II. I think there are some problems with the official Jewish version of the history of World War II. I don't think Jews own the history of World War II, as they claim. So I don't travel in Europe.
Okay. Well, I don't travel there much. I have been there a few times. I went there in mid-1980s. And traveled around, went to the almost every country in Europe. There was a couple of the East Bloc countries I wasn't able to get to because of visa restrictions, but I did get to the Soviet Union even. And then I went a couple more times. Last time I went, I guess, was about a dozen years ago or so. And I was staying in Belgium with an army officer friend of mine there with NATO. And he was taking me around Brussels, and he was calling, Brussels, and I guess even more Liège, which is another city in Belgium, calling it the cesspool of Europe, which I thought was kind of an offensive sounding term. But his point was that you go to these vast neighborhoods in Brussels or Liège or other European cities, and don't see very many Europeans. You were seeing a lot of Muslims, and he was implying that the population is becoming increasingly Muslim, and the Muslims, are either incapable or unwilling to assimilate, and perhaps their assimilation might not even be desired by some people, but they're reproducing, reproducing faster than the Europeans, and I guess we are starting to see some of the implications of that today, where you have this very large and growing population that's for whatever reason unassimilable and has a grudge, has a chip on their shoulder. And when I say their shoulder, it may not be even a substantial, more than just a small minority that really has a chip on their shoulder. Who knows? But it's enough that it's creating massive problems in terms of crime and in terms of terrorism, but also the Europeans are really having to retreat from their own culture, their own heritage, and these countries one after another are becoming more or less officially multicultural and no longer European. And it's amazing sometimes when you're hearing about the ethnic Arabs or ethnic Turks who go off to fight in Syria on the side of ISIS, and they get referred to as Europeans, which is kind of amazing. So the term European has been redefined. So many terms have been redefined. We have another caller, and that is Mike in Kentucky. Mike, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Hey, welcome to the show, Mike. What's on your mind?
I think I know you haven't really strayed a whole lot into the biblical aspect of this, but it is, Easter weekend.
And, hey, it's Easter on the East Coast. It's already Easter.
Whatever it is, I can't figure this out either because I've done some reading on it. I have no idea why my calendar says Passover is Friday because you can't have a high Sabbath next to the Saturday Sabbath because there's no food preparation. So they always have at least a day between the Sabbath and the high Sabbath, like Yom Kippur or whatever. So why in the world we have Passover and Easter this, or, I mean, Good Friday this year the same day, I don't get it. I don't know what the, I don't know how they've calculated that, but there, you know, I think in the Old Testament it says something like, be not tossed about by all the signs of the heaven, you know, and it talks about the, we just went through this whole last couple of years of these book salesmen selling everything on the blood moons and all this. And, of course, the Jewish calendar is lunar.
It's a lunar calendar.
When is there going to be a lunar eclipse? It's always going to be in the middle of the month where the full moon is. And that's when these blood moons have happened all back through. You know, they try to point and say, look, that's what happened in 1492 when they kicked the Jews out of Spain. But the Tetrads happened after, not before, that happened. So it is just, they're tossing Christians around like playthings. And it's partly because they don't know the book that they're reading. You know, it talks about these people as a brood of vipers, a den of thieves. You know, I consider myself adopted in, and they've conditioned
adopted Christian into what
to the tribe of the Nazarene, you know, that Yeshua was talking about. I mean, when you accept him, then you're part of that inheritance, but you're not, I don't think, part of the brood of vipers and a den of thieves that made my father's house into a, you know, house of thieves. You know, that those occultists had taken over and corrupted the temple system, and there's a lot of cultural stuff that people don't get when they read the Bible, like, for instance, the inner sanctum where God came, you know, where the sacrifice was made, the Holy of Holies, is called heavens and earth. So when it talks about the heavens and earth shall pass away, but my words will not pass away, that happened. The Holy of Holies was destroyed by the Romans. So a lot of people miss a lot of stuff in the New Testament. And, you know, who in Revelation, who are these Jews who say, I think it's Revelation 9, who are the, if so many of these Christians run around saying this is the last days, you know, who are the Jews that say they are Jews, but they're not? And what is the strong delusion if these are the last days? So this is the kind of stuff you can't talk about in Christian churches. But, you know, if we're not allowed to read our own Bible, what has invaded Christianity to stop that? I mean, that you have to be, as is the elephant in the room, who are the Jews that say they are Jews, but they're not? Who are the brood of vipers? Who are the den of thieves? You know, who are these people if they still exist today? And, yes, I've got a book called The Other Victims, which talks about all of these other groups that were targeted by the Third Reich. They were cleaning house. It's called racial hygienics. They got rid of, you know, homosexuals. They got rid of people that were defectives. And a huge number of people were killed because the supply lines were cut, so the people in these work camps and concentration camps were starved. Mm-hmm. So, and even after the end of the war, they didn't, I don't think back then, understood how you have to wean people back onto food, and they killed a lot of people by overfeeding them. I've done that with a dog that was starved. I gave a dog cataracts because he was starved for a week and a half, and I gave him food and gave him cataracts because you know, you can't just feed people as much as they want to eat when they're starved like that. So they you know, okay. The Allies killed a lot of people too.
So I mean, well, there were the bombing supply lines. Don, do you have anything you want to add to this?
Well, I think he's right about everything. We also saw this in the Civil War, where many of the so-called atrocities against Union soldiers were based on the fact that the South couldn't even feed its own civilian population, and the North did everything it could to destroy the Southern economy. And, of course,
yes,
the consequence of that is they couldn't feed Northern prisoners of war, just as they couldn't feed their own families. He talks about people reading their Bible. I assume you mean the New Testament.
And, right. Well,
There's something in the New Testament that I was raised as a Southern Baptist, raised as a Protestant, and I kind of grew away from religion when I was in my 20s. But there's a verse in there, and I think I've seen it several times. It's a statement referring to the early Christians, and it says, "For fear of the Jews." And you see this over and over again. And, you know, there are all kinds of red lights in the New Testament. I mean, separate and apart from the Old Testament, which is a manual on how to commit mass murder and sadism and torture. And it's frankly, it was very, very frightening to me. When I was a little boy in Sunday school, they talked about the Jews were God's chosen people. And, you know, very naively, I said, well, if they're God's chosen people, shouldn't we be going to their church? You know, I took this step pretty seriously, and I didn't want to be on God's bad side. I mean, there was a story where I think it was Abraham was ordered to kill his own child, sacrifice his own child. And I had one of those Bibles, you know, back in the 60s. And it was traditional, had, you know, many Renaissance-type paintings, and there was a painting of this guy with this huge knife about to plunge it into his child. And it was very horrifying to me. It was very frightening to me. There were a lot of things about the Bible that were very frightening to me. But you see over and over again these flashing red lights about how it was the Jews who killed Jesus. He challenged Jewish power, and they killed him. Now, there's nothing particularly unusual about that narrative. The whole history of humankind is, you know, up-and-coming people challenging the established order at some level. What is the Protestant Reformation? What is the history of that, if not, you know, new people challenging the existing order? But like you, I mean, I agree. I agree that people don't seem to read very well, and sometimes because of a bias or a predisposition, people are blind to text that is right in front of them. I've seen this in the legal profession. Reading judicial opinions such as Brown versus the Board of Education. And, you know, you ask any lawyer, even lawyers on our side, what is the holding in Brown versus the Board of Education, 1954? He said, well, blacks have a right to go to white schools and they have a right to equal education. And that's not how the court defined the question. The court specifically said, the question presented to us is as follows. I'm paraphrasing, I don't have it completely word for word, but I'm like 99% there, okay? Does the separation of children based on races, separate and apart from the issue of the tangible aspects of education, deny minority children an educational opportunity? We hold that it does. Okay? It is not the right to an equal education that is guaranteed to minority children. What is guaranteed to minority children is a property right in human beings, a property right that says they have a right to the compelled physical presence of captive white children sitting next to them in a chair in that classroom. Little Rock, Arkansas, the United States Army was deployed not against a foreign power, not to plug the holes in the Mexican border, but against white children standing there keeping guard so that they would not be allowed to run away from racially integrated classrooms. What was the purpose of slavery? The purpose of slavery, the laws, the fugitive slave laws, the purpose of slavery was to stop black people from running away from whites. The purpose of civil rights laws, the purpose of the Brown decision, is to stop white people from running away from blacks. Okay, this sentence in the Brown decision, and I know I read it in law school, and you're in law school, you're drinking lots of coffee and getting by on not much sleep, maybe. But I finally sat down. I read a book. Truth be told, I got a lot of my clarity on the whole civil rights issue in the Brown decision. Reading a book by a black lawyer, a civil rights lawyer, came up in the 50s and 60s, named Charles Ogletree, teaches at Harvard Law School. And he wrote a book called With All Deliberate Speed, which was a statement that was taken from Brown versus the Board of Education. It says we have to achieve racial integration with all deliberate speed. And he's talking about how we have to force our way into these schools and force these white kids. And he talks about the Brown decision, and he cites that sentence that I just quoted you.
that basically gives black people property rights and white children. And then they talk about white flight and how the Supreme Court was forced to deal with the problems of white people running away. There was a case in Michigan and in Detroit, and they wanted to know if they could throw a net over the suburbs around Detroit. And remember, the whole basis of integration is remedial, to remedy past discrimination. And so they wanted to drag in kids from all these surrounding communities because there weren't enough white kids left in Detroit to integrate the schools. See, that's the problem with white genocide. You argue on the one hand that white children are an educational opportunity, the denial of which is an affront and a permanent injury on black children. But when you wipe out white people, you wipe out white children too. And I ask people this. They say, you think it's a great thing that white people are disappearing? Where will you find the inventories of captive white children when white people disappear? When white people disappear, white children disappear too. No white children, no white race, no white taxpayers. And you know, somewhere they sense there's something wrong, and then they start calling me a racist and a you know, all the things with which we are all very, very familiar. But your question is, why can't people read the Bible? And I would ask the same question of many lawyers. And I've had some white activist lawyers who didn't get it, who didn't get my interpretation of the Brown decision, saying that it's the separation of based on race, it is a violation of a right. Well, if that's a violation of a right, how do you cure that violation? You force unwilling people together at bayonet point if necessary. That's freedom. That's democracy. That's equality. And I'll tell you, the white laity, the rank and file white people, I've talked about this for several years now on internet talk radio. Everybody gets it except the white lawyers. They don't get it for some reason. They fall back on the old argument. Well, racially integrated schools produce bad educational outcomes. Therefore, racial integration is wrong. And my response to that is, if you condemn the enslavement of white children because it produces bad educational outcomes, are you prepared to defend the enslavement of white children if it produced good educational outcomes? The answer clearly has to be no. No.
Okay. Okay. Hey, Mike, you have anything else before we go to the next caller?
If you want to be in that kingdom, that is what I'm talking about. That, you know, you're talking about a spiritual kingdom, and he wasn't offering us to be a king on a throne, and that's one of the things of the founding of America. We weren't we weren't trying to establish a king, you know. And you can find all these quotes by the founders that talked about that sort of thing, and it comes right out of the Bible. So,
okay, well, thanks for your call, Mike.
All right, bye-bye.
Yeah, we have another break coming up in just a couple minutes, and we'll take some more calls. And let me get that number here. I don't have it memorized. First day on the job. It is 1-800-313-9443. You know, before we go to the break, one of the areas of Zionist-occupied America, you know, Pat Buchanan talks about Capitol Hills being, you know, Israeli-occupied territory. A big hunk of the Christian church, a big hunk of the evangelical church could be termed as Zionist-occupied territory. And you think of the number one you know, Christian Zionist organization, which is Christians United for Israel, and who is the executive director of it? I mean, the front man is Pat Hagee, the minister from San Antonio, but the executive director is David Brogue, his cousin, his first cousin, Hebrewized the name Brogue to Barak. Ehud Barak, the prime minister of Israel. So you have the prime minister of Israel's cousin, who is the leader of Christians United for Israel, the largest Christian Zionist organization in America. Not just a Jew, but a first cousin of the Israeli prime minister. Okay, we will be back on the other side of the break. We'll be talking to more callers and talking with attorney Don Advo from California.
Now,
and we are back. That didn't sound like Freebird. Okay, we've had Freebird for our bumper music for a couple of segments. Okay, so we're back with Don Advo, and we are accepting calls. And let me get that number back out again for these last 40 minutes. It's 1-800-313-9443, and we have Bill in Idaho. Bill, are you there?
Yes, sir. Bless you, and thanks for an excellent broadcast. Wonderful first effort.
Thank you very much.
I was hoping that both of you would hear my words, if not my heart. I'm calling from where, ultimately, they captured, unlawfully, I might mention, criminally prosecuted, and then criminally incarcerated, one of the preeminent lawful minds of this country. They did it using a mockingbird press via a foul blow advocacy of a criminal element within both church and state. I'm hoping that you would listen very closely to Lark's words and admonition, and you have him on as soon as possible to understand and appreciate at what risk, if not ultimate demise of the temple, of which I think he's attempting to protect. And yet at the same time, nobody is hearing his words nor his heart. Now, this is a state of siege here in Coeur d'Alene, and I only mention it by virtue of the fact that most recently the Zionazi war pigs within the judiciary, those sissies in black dresses, have used not only the media, ergo Pastor Tim Remington being shot here in Coeur d'Alene just before the primary he was representing for Cruz or whatever, managed to throw that. And you remember, it's always dual application, ARPA-DARPA, defense conversion, technology transfer, dual application any more than citizenship. And ultimately, they have used this whole entire Coeur d'Alene press, Saturday, March 25th, go backwards, 2016, page 48, and look at the record of how successfully they have used the resources that they've been able to manage to steal and thieve. And I'd recommend that's the Coeur d'Alene depressed mockingbird press that it is, and the advocacy of that tribe, that very stiff-necked and very dangerous tribe that our Lord mentioned, beware of those that would say they were but really weren't. They announced this weekend, Easter weekend, that the weakest, the poorest, and the most ill-prepared of this community would have no food from the Catholic Church, considering who's running that corporation. I would take heed. Everybody is at risk. Okay. Nobody is having Easter dinner with the Archbishop of Spokane, I would assume. Certainly not the poor, which our Heavenly Father, Lord Jesus, had advocated for most powerfully.
Okay, Bill. Well, thanks for your call. We have some more callers online that we're going to get to, but thanks for your call. We have Jimmy in Arizona. Jimmy, are you there? Jimmy? Okay. Well, there you go.
Hey.
Hey, what's on your mind, Jimmy?
I just wanted to call in and heap praise on both you guys. A couple of my favorites on the Rents Radio Network. Duke was quick to call me a Jew when I called into the Stormfront show earlier this week, but to be honest, the second hour of the Stormfront show with Don Advo is some of my favorite. I love hearing Don's take on things, and I really kind of don't like it so much when Duke comes in and steps on him. And likewise, Patrick, I always enjoy you and Kevin McDonald on the Duke show. That's really the kind of the high point of the Duke show. He seems to not let you guys talk enough. So just enjoying it, and look forward to hearing more of you.
Okay, thanks. Hey, I appreciate the praise. Speaking for myself, you know, David and I have this we have an agreement. And actually, you know, one thing I've told him, because, well, okay, I'll get to that after the break. It sounds like we have a hard break coming up. We'll get to that after the break, and then we have more callers. And our call-in number for the last half hour, 1-800-313-9443. Okay, and welcome back. The last half hour of the alternative media. And today it's myself, Patrick Slattery, and attorney Don Advo from California. And just addressing that last call from Jimmy in Arizona, especially if he's still listening, you know, regarding being on the show with Dr. Duke. You know, sometimes after a show, he'll apologize to me for having talked so long or, you know, cut me off. And what I tell him is actually the longer he talks, the more time I have to prepare. And some of the, what I think are the most important points I've been able to make is when I've had, like, you know, the first 40 minutes of the show to listen and to gather my, you know, listen to what he has to say and really gather my thoughts about what I want to say. And so I always tell him, you know, don't worry, you talk as long as you want. That's what I've found. And you know, I did not know him before I started doing the show. He invited me on as a guest once after I had published an article on Kevin McDonald's site, and he wanted to talk about that article, and he decided he liked me, and so I wind up being on the show almost every day. And one thing I've found is, you know, I didn't know who he, you know, I had never met him before. He's just a really decent, sincere person. I don't have, you know, he acknowledges, or he'll admit that he has had to spend so much time, you know, with other people trying to shut him up, the you know, the Zio media trying to shut him up, that he does have kind of a tendency to talk kind of forcefully. But that's my experience. Don, do you have anything to add to that?
Yes, I do. David Duke has been a hero of mine for many years. I agree with your psychological profile of him as a very kind, gentle person, one of the nicest, most decent people I've ever encountered. Here in Los Angeles, I've, you know, met a lot of famous people very casually. I'm certainly not in the same social circles, but I've done a lot of legal work that brought me into some interesting places. And a lot of people behind, they're really great. A lot of lawyers are great guys in court. You get them outside of court and they're foul mouthed, they're drunk. You know, they're snorting coke or whatever. David Duke is I've talked with him privately at length. He's every bit as much a kind, gracious gentleman in private as he is in public. I would not be embarrassed for them to play on national media any of the conversations that have occurred between us. And there's another factor. David Duke has run for high public office and has achieved it. He was in the Louisiana State House of Representatives. He was very popular in the state of Louisiana, and it was only by the dirtiest of dirty tricks that he was denied the governorship of that state and a spot in the United States Senate on behalf of Louisiana. So he hasn't, and he, as he once pointed out on one of our recent shows, he placed in the South Carolina primary, presidential primary, I believe it was 1992. I think he got more votes than Jeb Bush got. However many. So he brings an extraordinary perspective and experience into this. He has certainly done things and gone places that I will never go or see. And this is an election year. I think this is going to be one of the most critical election years we have ever had. And so I welcome it when he comes on the show. I really do. I know people have their favorite host and their favorite, you know, that sort of thing. But do not feel slighted because he comes on the show. You know, I've never objected. David Duke is welcome on any forum on which I have ever been a party or in which I ever will be a party. And I am proud to call him a friend. I am proud of the fact that I kind of zoomed to the top of white radio very, very quickly. I was asked to be a caller to Stormfront Radio, and they said on the air after I hung up on a call, would you like to be a call us about being an alternate host? And I did, and here I am, and I know I'm on a first name basis with David Duke and Don Black. These are great men. I mean, I'm a I'm a hollow shell of a person compared to them, and that they, you know, think I am worthy to be up there on Olympus with them is a great honor for me. So, I know David's a little pushy, he's a little aggressive, but he's earned the right to be. He has earned the right to say whatever he wants to say. And he I can't imagine where white nationalism would be today without David Duke.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not so much he's trying to be aggressive. The way he explained it to me is it just got to be habitual with him because he was so often in these situations where he had to keep talking or he'd be shut up. But anyway, it was great to hear from Jimmy in Arizona, and I'm flattered by his high opinion of the two of us. Okay, next we're going to Larry in Colorado. Larry, are you there?
Thank you for taking my call.
Welcome to the show.
I'm also a fan of Don Black and David Duke. And, you know, they put up with guys with these phony false flag theories, guys like Don Adbo and Robert Redwell. The reason they do it is because they know that a lot of their listeners buy into that baloney.
Well, for 1 second, you know, Don Adbo is here on the show, and not everybody is going to have the same outlook on every event, but you know, Don is a great guy, and I certainly hope you're not trying to disparage him. But do you have a question, sir?
Yeah, my question for Don Adbo. Don Adbo claimed that at Sandy Hook, it would have been impossible for Lanza to have killed all those kids. Don Adbo is an idiot. And the reason
Well, thank you for your call.
No, let him talk. I'm not
afraid. Okay. Is he still there? The thing is, you've already addressed this, and I don't want to have that kind of name calling. If you want to hear him, if he's still on and you want to hear him continue, go ahead. But I really don't want that kind of, it's fine for people to disagree, but we don't need to hear that type of thing. Is he still there? Okay, we're going to have Brent from Dallas. Brent, are you there?
Yeah. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Yeah, I was wondering if I could ask you a question, please.
Sure.
Okay. I kind of hang around with Grapevines. And one of your callers mentioned Founding Fathers, and it sparked the idea for the question. It has to do with the Articles of Confederation and the first president of the United States. Under the Articles of Confederation, they had presidents for a year, I heard, and the first president of the Articles of Confederation, which, you know, sprung into Washington being sworn in 6 years after 1776, after 1782. Mm-hmm. So there was 6 years there, and the first president was mulatto. He was half Indian and half white. And I think it was...
Well, then, well, that would be... I may be wrong. The term is mestizo rather than mulatto. But under the Articles of Confederation, there was an officer termed the president. He didn't actually have executive authority. It wasn't a particularly important position. And, of course, under the Articles of Confederation, there wasn't a federal government. It was a confederation. But what's your point?
I was just wondering, is that true? I don't know if it's even true.
Let me clarify
a
little bit.
There were presidents. Don, yeah?
Yeah, you want to address this? There was no president of the United States until the Constitution was accepted and implemented. Under the Articles of Confederation, that office did not exist. Now, there was a president. The Articles of Confederation established a legislative body, a one-house legislature. All right, the Continental Congress essentially was the governing body of the entire country. There was no federal court system. There was no federal executive, no attorney general.
No agencies, right?
No agency, no executive power at all. It was purely legislative, and now you had presidents of legislative bodies. George Washington was the president of the Constitutional Convention in 1787, but the president of the United States was an office that was not created until the Constitution of 1787 was adopted.
So under the Articles of Confederation, the person called president would have been president of a legislative body.
President
of the Congress. And if you ever listen to Senate proceedings, when you hear the senators speaking, if you're watching C-SPAN, they're always saying, Mr. President, Mr. President. And they're not talking to Mr. Obama. They're talking to whoever is the presiding officer. There is a president pro tem of the Senate who is typically the senior member of the majority party, but that person is usually rather old and isn't usually actually the presiding officer. They'll have temporary presiding officers. So does that answer your question, Brent?
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you for calling, Brent. Okay, I think we have another caller. I'm not sure what the caller's name is. Do we have another caller? No? Okay, great. So we do have a little bit of time left, and so our number here is 1-800-313-9443. So, Don, Let's talk a little bit. We haven't talked at all about the election, and that's so topical, and it's hard to go 3 hours without talking about the election. You know, there's a lot going on, and I don't know if I really want to get into this latest development with Cruz and his mistresses, or the allegations of Cruz and his mistresses, but, you know, we don't have a primary this coming week. Is there anything you want to talk about regarding the election?
Yeah, I think the election is this will be the most consequential presidential election of my lifetime. I believe the outcome of this election could very well change the course of history. I think the campaign has already changed the course of history. It has tilted the balance of power. It has tilted the narrative. It has tilted the discussion of issues crucial to the existence of white people heavily in our favor. I know Donald Trump's got his warts. He's got his problems. Some of the things he says and does are just beyond the pale. But look, if the guy builds a wall and starts kicking out Mexicans and keeps out Muslims and puts tariffs on goods and brings jobs back, I don't care what he says about somebody's wife. I mean, I don't care who he marries. I don't care what he does, okay? We had a serial rapist in the White House. We had Lyndon Johnson, who was a multiple murderer and a horrible, disgusting psychopath. I think Donald Trump, with his few shortcomings, would be a breath of fresh air. But Donald Trump has opened the floodgates of white anger, of white empowerment, of white privilege, I mean, if you want to call it that. But, you know, when you see 35,000 white people show up in Mobile, Alabama at a Trump rally, it's because 35,000 people got in their cars and drove there on their own dime. They weren't bussed in by labor unions or George Soros or the SPLC, and they weren't paid money to go bust up a rally or anything like that. This is so refreshing and so exciting to me to see Trump come out and do the things he's done. He has called the media the liars and the frauds repeatedly that they are. He has said that, you know, 9/11 was a fraud and Bush lied us into war. He has talked about the destruction of Europe by all of this immigration. He has attacked political correctness. They are pulling out the stops, out the stops to try to silence this man, to try to destroy his ability to campaign. So people ought to be out there voting for Trump in the primary. Here's a guy who supports our narrative, and if he can't get support, we are screwed. I think the support he is getting shows how white people are finally getting it intuitively in their gut, you know. Whatever you want to call it. White people have known they've been screwed for a long time. Now there's a chance to fight back. And if we don't take this chance to strike back, we will have lost a great opportunity.
It's a tremendous opportunity, And I'm going to add one other pretty important issue to that long list that you laid out. And we are our relations with Russia have become so bad. And why are they bad? There's no reason for it. Is it so horrible that Russia has a president who has got 80 or 90% popularity, and he supports traditional marriage, traditional family relationships. Is that so horrible? And he has rebuilt their economy, and he has taken back power, or at least a lot of the power, from this small, I don't know the adjectives to use, but these horrible Jewish oligarchs who just robbed the country blind. And now we're at the brink of war with Russia. It should be an issue in the campaign. It's not. But Donald Trump has managed to say a few things. Why should we start World War III over Syria? Why should we start World War III with Russia? I mean, it's just a little bit of common sense, but you don't see it anywhere else. And so if for no other reason, and there's plenty of other reasons to support him, but if for no other reason, if Hillary or Cruz or Kasich actually did the things that they promised to do regarding punching Russia in the nose, as Kasich put it, or nuking Syria, like Cruz says, or Hillary with she's just so aggressive with Russia, probably the worst. She's the ones that the Russians feel is the most aggressive. If they did the things that they're talking about, it's World War III. And Don, in our generation, we had the idea, duck and cover. A war with Russia was something that civilization might not survive. And now you've got people just acting as if it's going to be another one of these wars that you watch on cable news, just like it's a sporting event. That's what it's come. It's come to people think a war. You invade Iraq, you invade, and CNN's there on the spot, and you turn on the TV and you watch it and you cheer a bit, and then you turn it off and you go to your social club or you go to your job. It's not going to be like that. A war with Russia. No, this is a tremendous opportunity, and it's not going to just happen again. The only reason it's happening is because Donald Trump has billions of dollars and can at least finance himself in this election, and it's not going to happen again. Nobody else is standing up and giving us this kind of opportunity.
I couldn't agree with you more. You're absolutely right. It's a great opportunity, and you're going to see a lot of people steered. We talked about this earlier during the second hour. You're going to see people steered away from the mainstream media. They are already running away. Audiences are migratory animals, and they run away from something they don't like. That's why Rush Limbaugh became so popular, and now Rush Limbaugh is losing his audience to people like us. There's lots of people out there, many opportunities for us, and we have got to help our people achieve clarity, moral and intellectual clarity. Yes, white people have a right to exist. Yes, white people should have the same rights of freedom of association, freedom of assembly, and freedom of speech that all these other minorities have. Today, America is a racial spoils system where races compete against each other for jobs, for college placements, for all kinds of government benefits. Every single race competes as an organized team.
Okay, and we're going off to our last break now. Okay, this is our last break. We'll be back for a few more minutes after the break with Don Advo. Okay, and we're back. The alternative media. We have just a few more minutes, and we have a couple more callers. Jerry in Chicago, are you there?
Yes, I am, gentlemen. Thank you
very much. Hi, Jerry. Welcome to the show.
Hey, I wanted to mention that on March 15th here in Illinois, I went and cast my vote for Trump, and the reason I did was because the media doesn't like him. The Democratic Party, the Republican Party doesn't like him. The Pope doesn't like him. And it's good enough for me because I'm not crazy about all of those people. So I'm definitely anti-establishment. I'll vote for I'll vote for him. Let's put it that way. But I wanted to correct Don on something. He said 1787 was when George Washington came into play. There was actually 8 people prior to George Washington that held the office that are equal to of a president. Let's just say they were president.
Yeah, we got into that. That's the, but that's not president of the United States. That office came about with the promulgation of the Constitution, which was 87, and 1789 was when Washington was actually inaugurated. But there were people with a title president, but it wasn't president of the United States. It would have been president of the Continental Congress, and it was an office without executive authority or executive powers.
Yes, it was. And the way I understand it is John Hanson, 1781 to 1782, was actually our first black president, not Barack insane Obama.
Okay, well, thank you very much. We have one more caller. We have time for Len in Connecticut, who's been waiting on the line. Len, are you there?
I think so much of the problem people have with Donald Trump, they think he's anti-Semitic. But if you listen to the statement that he made before AIPAC a couple of nights ago, he made it very clear of his love for Israel. And I think for people like Don Adzo, who claim that they're not Zionists, but they support Donald Trump, I think you, Mr. Adzo, makes a complete jackass.
Well, okay. So Trump went to AIPAC, and it was entirely predictable. We all knew he was going to say the usual things. And it's interesting. It was the only time he's ever read from a teleprompter. So it was a pre-prepared speech, and he said what he thought he had to say. And, you know, I wasn't happy that he went and did it, but I knew he was. Don, you, what was your opinion?
Same as you. I mean, the guy, first time he's ever read a speech off a teleprompter, I think he knew he had to be scripted to survive that. I'd rather he hadn't gone, but he did, and that's that. I don't understand what the caller's point was, but...
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, can we have confidence that Donald Trump is going to take on Jewish power in the United States square on? No, we don't have confidence, but he is a necessary first step. We're not going to be able to take on that power unless
Jewish power is taking him on.
They're afraid of him. There's no doubt they're afraid of him. And he is knocking down the walls of taboos and political correctness and creating openings. And that's what we keep saying. He's creating openings. It's not that he's going to take us where we need to go, but he's creating openings. And I think that is so valuable. And we're never going to get where we need to go without those types of openings. And for me, he's a godsend. I never liked him before, and I don't particularly like him now. But I just think it's so crucial to support him, and I do think he has a reasonable chance of being elected.
I agree, he does.
Okay, I think I'm hearing the closing bumper music. Is that it, or is it my late night hallucinations? I guess so. Okay, well, so that was our show. We will be back next week. I will once again be filling in for Farron. It was Patrick Slattery. And thank you so much, Don Advo, for being here these last 2 hours, and Benjamin Fulford for the first hour. And we'll be back next week with another, what I hope will be another great show. Good night, everyone, and happy Easter. I was